You know, I wonder sometimes if the founders of AA and talking to the Oxford group and coming out with the spiritual concept of a program, if they had any idea of what they were letting loose on the universe. Because it is probably one of the most powerful programs that has a recipe, tells you how to move from this place of isolation into a place in your life where you're connected with life and connected with one another and connected with the Creator God. And that's what I perceive spirituality to be. That it is being in relationships that give us energy and give us life. And that it doesn't have a goal that you finally reach, but it takes you to a place where you are very aware that there is something more to be had, and something more to be learned, and something more to be given to you so that your life is full. I am so grateful for things in How It Works, things that, I'm recognizing people that I haven't seen in a long time. I'm realizing, when I first started, the one thing I remember that I heard at my first meeting was God could and would if we were to seek God. The greatest piece of wisdom, I think, that AA has come up with is God as we understand God to be. And doesn't that in reality give us permission to look at our own lives, to look at our own needs, to look at our own shortcomings, and know that there is a higher power that will care for us and that will meet those needs? And how you define it is up to you. Were you ever given that permission as a kid? You know, I've been in AA for a while, and one of the places that I am at in my own life is, and it's a happy place, because I am questioning everything. As a religious woman, I'll just say this to you. I'm very disappointed in my church. I'm very disappointed in the religion of my choosing. However, I stay with it and celebrate it because I have been able to come to a God that I understand. And I remember right at the very beginning, a guy by the name of Bill Gleason who said, once you can recognize your higher power as love, you've got it made. And it took me years to really understand what he was talking about, other than I began to recognize that through the steps, when I got out of the way and allowed this loving Creator God that I was coming to understand, to take charge, there were some pretty wonderful things that happened to me. And, I think back to when I was in college, I went to school for dental hygiene, and I didn't enter religious life till I was 46. This was in 1982, so I was a late bloomer. But I remember in college believing that out there was some guy that was going to save me, on the white horse, and he was going to charge in and swoop me up, and we would live happily ever after. And guess what? It didn't happen. And it didn't happen because alcohol became my God. Alcohol became the spirit, if you will, that I chose to be closest to, believing that it had some value. But throughout all of my drinking years, the one thing that I recognized was there was a kind of emptiness and a kind of longing that I had all the time and couldn't figure out where to have that filled. I didn't know. I thought alcohol was doing it. I was engaged a couple times and thought, well, you know, my fiancés would fill whatever this was that I was looking for. And I dare say today that I believe that every single one of us here has that kind of longing. I don't know what you call it. I call it a longing for a creator God that has that something more. And the something more to me is peace, joy, compassion, hospitality, forgiveness. And where did I get all of that stuff? I got it at the meetings, and I got it from people. I used to hear oftentimes, I don't get the spiritual part of the program. And I would dare say that if people are truly believing that there's a spiritual part out there somewhere, we haven't done steps. Our spiritual lives, our spiritual being, from my perception, happened from as soon as we were birthed into being. And what happened to our spirit along the line? Maybe very early on for some of us, it was crushed or it was challenged. And the only individual perhaps that we thought we could depend on to care for us was ourselves. Our trust was broken, or we were betrayed or disappointed and moved into that place of isolation where I will take care of myself, where we move into that place of just being autonomous. I don't need anybody else. Or being the individual that had to do everything perfectly. My concept of God in my growing up years, through my family, through the religious women, the Sisters of Mercy, I'll tell you what, I left high school and said, this is the last time I'm gonna have anything to do with that crowd. So be careful. Be careful. You're liable to become priests and nuns or something. The grass is not greener, let me say that to you. It's just different grass. But anyway, my whole philosophy was that there was this being that only wanted good kids. There was this being that only wanted good young adults, or older adults. And as children, or as I was growing up, my thing was that I had to do everything perfectly. And again, the great wisdom of AA that says we are not saints, and we're not asked to be. We're just asked to make some progress and a different way of living life, where we can put aside our expectations, not only of ourselves, but our expectations of one another, our expectations of our God. The higher power I know is full of surprises. I mean, you know, I never would have dreamed that I'd be doing what I am doing today some years back. Never would have dreamed it. Again, you know, I thought I'd be married and have kids and all of that stuff. One of the engagements that I had was broken because I couldn't figure out how to be married, be a mom, and be able to drink the way I was drinking. And drinking went out. There was just no choice. I knew I couldn't stop. I think that in terms of living spiritual lives, one of the words that I use today is the word evolve. That somewhere along the line we were introduced to this spiritual way of living life, And it began, as I said for myself in steps, and it began to evolve. As I became more comfortable with myself, I became more comfortable with you. As I became more accepting of myself, I became more accepting of a God that could care for me. Because it didn't make any difference anymore what I was doing. I was doing the best I could do, whatever that meant, at any given time. And believe that for my higher power, it was fine. I recall, I was in sixth grade, and I brought home a report card. It had all A's on it, except in geography, I got a C. And these were in the years when you brought home the report card to be signed, and it was your father that had to sign the card. And I brought the card home to be signed, and I'm showing my mother this with the C in geography. And she said to me, as only she could say, "My darling daughter, did you do your best?" And I said, "I think I did." And she told me, "Not even God asked for more than that. Not even God." And I think I was like about 33 before it made any sense. I'm thinking, well, maybe God doesn't expect anything, but I was scared to death of my father. As I say that, we pray the Lord's Prayer, and what do we say? Our Father. There are many of us that maybe spit over those words because it's a struggle to say our Father and determine a higher power that may remind us of somebody in our lives who had betrayed us or abused us. And again, the beauty of this program, determine yourself who your higher power is. All we're doing when we're praying is creating a relationship, our Father, Mother, whoever it may be, our whatever. We can do those things. Now, people standing next to you during the Lord's Prayer might get mad, but, if you're calling the Father something else, but so what? that's fine. That's your spirituality. But again, getting to a point in life where, I think this is the secret of maintaining a spiritual life, not just a spiritual life, but maintaining a good, solid recovery. I think it lies in the sixth and the seventh steps. We look at the tenth step with this ongoing inventory to see how we're doing and where we are. But do we ever go back and say, where am I in terms of how I respond to life? Do I respond to life and the people in it with a sense of a loving energy? Sometimes I do. I don't do it perfectly. But when I'm most spiritually moved, that's where I am. In this place of caring about other people, about wanting to know what's happening to them and meaning it and asking the question, how are you, and wanting to know. Am I doing that with a healthy energy? Or am I mean-mouthing? Am I still angry at something else? Have I adopted ways of response that stay with me today? Or have I humbly, because I haven't been able to change things all by myself, have I humbly asked God, I want to be free of what holds me back. I want to be free of the stuff that feels heavy. And you know what? There are some days that I don't feel that way either. There are some days if I'm mad at somebody, I'm convinced I have a right to be mad, and I'm going to determine how long I'm going to stay mad. And then when I find out I'm the only one that's mad, I decide, well, I guess I'll give that up. It has served no purpose. But, I grew up in a family where we were taught, who to be mad at. Does anybody relate to that? Where maybe your parents were mad at some aunt and uncle, so you better be mad at them too, or don't go to their home. And some of my family members have even croaked being mad at people for reasons they've forgotten. So I can tell you, I don't want to be that kind of person. I think more than anything, and I first heard this at an AA meeting when initially I was only relating to the women. You know, I couldn't quite relate to the guys. And was at a meeting one night, and here was a guy talking, and he was talking about all the things that he had lost. And he talked about being in jail, which I never was. He talked about losing his home. I never owned one. He talked about not having a driver's license. In those years, I didn't have one either. And then he said, I lost my freedom. And I thought, man, that's it. I lost my freedom. I didn't have any personal freedom. I didn't have the ability to make choices. I didn't have the ability to look at the experiences that I had and make a choice. Is this the way I want to keep going? Or do I want to change? And that's why I talk about the sixth and the seventh step. Did you ever in your life take one day and watch how you react to things? It's pretty surprising. It's very interesting. My favorite thing, and the first time I ever did it, you know where I did it? In Wegmans Express line. Oh my gosh, I was really mean. Here's this poor cashier trying to check out, and I'm huffing and puffing about somebody in front of me having eight items when it clearly says seven. You know, that kind of stuff. And then I began to observe myself when I was driving. I've changed a lot of my behaviors on the road. I don't chase after people to get even anymore. And what I have done, you know, I don't want to say, Catherine, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do something else. What I prefer to say is, this is the way I'm going to be today. Today, I'll be courteous on the road. Today, I'll let somebody pull out ahead of me. Today, I'll look to something positive, and you know what? It does something to your spirit. It energizes it. And the thing I think most of all is that when you have gotten to the point where you start having spiritual experiences, which I choose to call experiences of being connected, really connected, at a place of peace and at a place of thanksgiving. It happens in nature. I used to be one of these people that at meetings, I think, if anybody talks to me one more time of some sunset, I'm going to scream. Until I became a little spiritually awake, and I began noticing other things. And noticing that there is a sacred power in every single thing that has energy and has life. And for me today, if there is any way where my Creator God speaks to me the most, it is in creation, in the quiet, and in the silence. And oftentimes it comes from other people talking about the same things, where they have been, where they have sat quietly at a river, or where they have seen the sunrises or the moonrise or whatever it may be. In that silence, and you feel that sense of connectedness. Have you had that experience where you feel you're connected with what you are experiencing, whatever it is that is happening around you? You know what spiritual writers call that? No?
Euphoria.
Euphoria. spirituality today is talking a lot of being as one, being connected. Euphoria is one word. Peace is a word. That joy is a word. All of those things are the words to use. Spiritual writers today are talking about being connected in a sense of unity to anything that has life, of being connected to the universe. And we look back for many, many years, that kind of spirituality, what we are calling it today, is mysticism. It's being a mystic. I was at Rutgers Summer School of Alcohol Studies some year ago, and there was a gentleman there by the name of Ernie Kurtz. And Ernie Kurtz said, and I quote, "Alcoholics are frustrated mystics because we are always seeking that something that is above, some kind of experience that is a little bit greater than maybe we think has to be ordinary." Although, I'll tell you, I'm believing that some of the greatest mystical experiences happen in ordinary life. Elizabeth Barrett Browning said, "All the earth is a fire with God's love. Some people will take off their shoes because every bush is burning, and others will sit and pluck the blackberries." I hope that we can all become those people that see burning bushes in our ordinary days, those things that are extraordinary. It comes from gratitude. It comes from having a spiritual awakening that has allowed us to enjoy ourselves, enjoy one another, and be thankful to a creator, however we perceive that creator to be. There was a guy that I had first met in AA years back, and there were a number of people around at that time that were really getting frustrated when they would hear God. And I read somewhere, some time ago, it doesn't matter, but I read somewhere, somebody said, "It is when I stop speaking to you about God that you should doubt my love for you, because you are his marvelous and best gift to me." So I say that to each and to all of you. You are his marvelous and best gift. Whether you are brand new to this program doesn't make any difference. You are on your spiritual path. Call it what you will, it's a spiritual path. For those that have been around for a while, we get thirsty and hungry, you know, in a new way, and keep going. Fidelity to the steps and to the program, and especially caring for one another. I'm listening to the service committees that are here, that how that keeps us so fully connected to all that is sacred and all that is right in this program. Sometimes for me, thank you is not quite enough, and I don't have the words for it, so I guess that you being his marvelous and best gift to me will have to suffice. And I thank you very much for being here tonight. I welcome the people that are here at this meeting for the first time. I too am here at this meeting for the first time. So I thank you for your attention and allowing me to be with you tonight. Thank you for who you are.